Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The U.S. Geological Survey reports that Oklahoma had 7 earthquakes in less than a day over the past weekend. Earthquake Track reports that there were 122 earthquakes in that state in the past month, 847 earthquakes in the past year, and since 2008, the town of Jones, Oklahoma, has been home to 2,547 small earthquakes. What is going on? A study published earlier this month in Science magazine connects earthquakes across Ohio, Arkansas, and Texas to those states' pursuit of oil and gas. The problem is disposing of wastewater from water-intensive extraction operations. Hydraulic fracturing, the report says, or fracking is partly to blame. But of more concern is the disposal wells. Oil and gas are separated out from huge amounts of water pumped up from a target rock formation. Energy In Depth, a research group started by the Independent Petroleum Association of America, says that hydraulic fracturing has been catching some unmerited headlines lately as a result of questions about seismic activity. Despite what you may have heard, they say hydraulic fracking has been a safe and proven technology for decades and does not pose a major risk of inducing seismic events. This hour of the program, we will be speaking with Barbara Beekens. Barbara is a research hydrologist at the U.S. Geological Survey in Menlo Park, California, and she is co-author of the article that we mentioned in the journal Science about the Oklahoma earthquakes. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Barbara. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that is @KDunnShow. Hi, Barbara. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I look at those headlines and these stories, and you have to say, wait a second. Over the weekend, they had 7 earthquakes in a day, and the number that they've had in the last year is absolutely astronomical. Are these just way higher than anything we've seen in many previous years?
They are higher than what's been seen since records started to be collected in Oklahoma, which dates back to the late 1960s. So the rate is about 40 times higher compared to the 30 years prior.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned this science article that you co-authored. What is the connection between the earthquakes, if we can say with any certainty, and some of the procedures used in fracking?
Well, what was the point of the science article was to look at the propagation of the wastewater disposed in injection wells and see if that the rate of propagation of that fluid in the subsurface could be correlated with where the earthquakes have been occurring.
Mm-hmm. And you found that was the case?
Yes, we found that with a reasonable formation properties, in other words, the property of the formation for transmitting the water pressure, we could get the fluid out to as far as the location of the Jones earthquake swarm.
Mm-hmm. And Jones is where they've had a huge number of small earthquakes, but earthquakes in the past few years. I mean, huge number.
Yes, yeah, I guess the perspective on the piece by Eric Han noted that it's the talk of the town in the local cafe.
I'm sure it is the talk of the town. Yeah. Tell me more about this process. What does fracking entail? What is this wastewater? Where does it come from? Where does it go?
Well, in Oklahoma, about half of the wastewater comes from oil production and about half comes from gas production. And so the water is produced both from exploiting oil from previously exhausted formations by pumping large volumes of water. So that's called dewatering.
Mm-hmm.
From gas production, there some of it could be from hydrofracturing or even from traditional gas production in Oklahoma. So it comes from the formation. it can't be disposed of on the surface because it's very high in salt. So it has to be disposed of some other way. And so it's injected usually into a different formation, quite deep. And the ability of the formation to accept the water depends on its so-called permeability.
And we're talking about, I have read, as deep as 2 miles. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And at those depths, there's no potential for drinking water contamination because the water that's already there is saline.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they dispose of it in these deep wells.
Mm-hmm. And is it a whole lot of water, or does it vary from place to place?
The amount of water varies from place to place depending on how much is produced during the oil and gas operations. And so one of the issues in our article is that in some places the wells are much higher volume. So Oklahoma has more than 9,000 disposal wells, but it seems that just a small number of them are the high-volume disposal wells.
Mm-hmm. And the high-volume wells are the ones that are creating more problems or not?
Well, that is one of the working hypotheses that the research community is investigating right now. So there's definitely a much greater focus on whether those wells in particular are the reason that only a few wells seem to cause problems, and there are thousands of wells that don't cause problems.
Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that some of this wastewater is trucked away. Where does it go?
Well, the trucks arrive at these disposal wells. And so if you watch a disposal, we actually visited a disposal well operation as part of our research group field trip, and the trucks arrive and the water's stored in tanks, and then it's injected over time by these wastewater operators.
What do you make of the statements, and many of them are pretty much the same? This one I quoted from a research group, Energy in Depth, that was started by the Independent Petroleum Association. Their comments, hydraulic fracturing has been catching, they say, some unmerited headlines lately as a result of questions about seismic activity. Despite what you may have heard, they say, hydraulic fracturing has been a safe and proven technology for decades and does not pose a major risk of inducing felt seismic events.
I think that is a very reasonable statement and very well thought out in its wording. With only a few cases in which fracking has produced earthquakes, mostly fracking produces micro earthquakes too small to be felt, and those micro earthquakes are actually used to monitor the propagation of the fractures. And so fracking itself has the best seismic monitoring of any oil and gas operation in the world, because seismic monitoring is part of controlling the operation. So there's only been less than a handful of cases worldwide where the fracking operation itself has resulted in felt earthquakes. That is contrasted with the wastewater disposal, and some of that wastewater comes from fracking operations, from the produced water from fracking. And so that's where the confusion lies.
So the wastewater disposal is what we're concerned about.
That's right.
Seismic. I don't understand. If you're looking at a huge increase in the number of earthquakes, I know that a couple other states, at least from my reading, show that a couple other states, Colorado and at least one other, have suspended or halted this injection process. Ohio is the other one, while they examine, while people like you do more reports. Does it make sense for a state to suspend operations until we know exactly what's going on here?
Yes, that has been the action of the state, and these injection wells are generally regulated by the states. The states are given responsibility by the EPA to regulate state by state. And as you say, Ohio shut down injection in the Youngstown, Ohio well because it had caused some greater than magnitude 4 earthquakes. And they determined that the well was injecting into crystalline basement, and injection into crystalline basement is considered problematic.
So what do you think should be done in Oklahoma?
Well, in Oklahoma, I think that that's up to the regulators in Oklahoma. And they, I think that their comments about our article have been very reasonable. And they are interested in more data on to better understand which wells cause problems, as are we, the authors of the paper.
Mm-hmm. And how much data is there? How much has this been investigated?
Well, generally, what we have, the typical approach is that when an injection well looks like it's causing problems based on the region, the nationwide seismic network, the local researchers, often from the closest university, get out and deploy a local seismic network, and that is needed to get precise locations of earthquakes, and then it's possible to see how close the earthquakes are to an injection well and what is the closest injection well, and then we can look at the rate that it's injecting at. So we're at this point, we're sort of following the problem rather than being in front of the problem. So there, in order to get out in front of the problem, I have some ideas about what kinds of data would be better.
Mm-hmm. People have asked whether or not Oklahoma, the people who are defending all of this, saying that this has been going on for a long time, for decades now. I'm wondering, when you say 1960, and we've seen a huge increase, can we tie the increase in earthquakes directly to this wastewater problem with fracking? Is that why there are, or are there other possible reasons this is happening?
There are dissenting voices out there saying that natural earthquake swarms have occurred before routine seismic monitoring was collected in Oklahoma. It's striking that the rate has increased by a factor of 40. So a huge rate increase, and the rate increase has gone lockstep with the increase in wastewater disposal, which has doubled in Oklahoma in the same time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's more of a correlation rather than the geologic community having specific measurements in the earth that show that the pore pressure has reached a level that triggered failure on a fault.
I would imagine that there are a lot of people who want things to continue as they are because this is really crucial, I understand, to the state's economy. One out of every six people in Oklahoma gets a paycheck thanks to the oil and gas business. They produce 27% of the state's annual tax revenue. We're talking about significant money for people, for jobs, and for the state.
Yes, and I think it's one of the interesting things about our country is that these regulations are controlled at the state level. And so in a democracy, the people of Oklahoma can inform themselves and can make a decision about this hazard and what they would like their state government to do about it.
So it's not up to the national government? Isn't Congress or somebody looking at this? Because there are other states doing this, and you don't want to put people at risk if you're doing things the wrong way.
Yes. Well, the USGS has been working with EPA in order to provide better science behind the hazard. And I guess from a national perspective, the other thing that varies by state are building codes. California's building codes are designed for a certain rate of earthquakes that occur because we're a tectonically active state. Oklahoma's building codes are designed based on the historic earthquakes in Oklahoma. and not necessarily for this new increased rate of earthquakes from the oil and gas, potentially tied to oil and gas.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest, and here is how you reach us. Our guest this hour is co-author of the piece that we mentioned that's in Science Magazine. Barbara Beacons is a research hydrologist at the U.S. Geological Survey. She's in Menlo Park, California, and co-author of the new article in the journal Science about the Oklahoma earthquakes. And they're making quite a bit of news. It may not be front page news, although you wonder why it isn't, because we're not talking just a little earthquake. We're talking about small earthquakes, but many, many, many of them over the last weekend, over the last year, and in certain areas, thousands of them since 2008. Here's our phone number. Join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Put yourself in the mindset of a person who lives in Oklahoma, close to where this procedure is being done, and you're feeling thousands of earthquakes over the last few years. What would you like to have investigated? To you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hydraulic fracking, this hour of the program. The question of the hour is, why have there been so many earthquakes in Oklahoma? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Greg in Madison is our first caller for you. Hi, Greg. Greg, please turn, Greg, turn your radio down. You have to do that before you can talk. Bill in Janesville. Hi.
Hello. I was wondering if your guest would provide some information as to what it would feel like on the surface for those directly above, and how far away would this impact be noticed for both the smaller earthquakes and the larger ones?
A magnitude 3 earthquake, I think that you have to be sitting down. One thing to do is to look on the web and Google Mercalli scale. The Mercalli scale was designed before seismometers to have the person describe what they felt or what actually happened to buildings or what they observed around them. And then those observations can then be converted into a magnitude. So you might get a lot from just Googling the Mercalli scale, and that can be related to what we call the modern magnitude measurement when we report a magnitude 3 or a magnitude 4. But 3, only people very quiet might feel it. 4, a lot of people will feel it, but there isn't usually damage. And then when you get to high 4 or 5, you start to see some damage to cracking and things. So that's a sort of a short answer.
The more earthquakes there are they about the same size? Are there fears that this could generate a larger earthquake?
Well, that is a really good question. We don't understand what controls the magnitude of the earthquakes caused by injection. But magnitudes of greater than 5 have been linked to injection activity. And so so that's why it's a concern that there may be a hazard.
Mm-hmm. Jim in Mount Pleasant, hi.
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 I wanted to comment on the industry press release about fracking being so safe and not causing any problems at all. That's just standard industry practice to deny everything. They did it in just recently in Pennsylvania because of the fracking there, and they did it way back in the 1960s in Colorado. And it's you just cannot trust those press releases. Fracking is inherently dangerous, and it's unregulated. The Halliburton Amendment exempts them from all the air and water pollution laws, and they can just do anything with any chemical they want to use. and some of them are extremely dangerous.
We haven't talked much about the chemicals. Can you tell us what they are, Barbara?
No, I can't tell you the chemicals. I'm not prepared to talk about fracking. I can say to the caller that the industry statement that you read limited itself to the risk of causing earthquakes from fracking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fracking debate in general nationwide could benefit from more specific concerns about which particular aspect of fracking people are worried about. So the seismic hazard is different from the other issues associated with fracking.
But it's kind of nitpicking, isn't it? You can't have, I mean, when you're talking about fracking, you're talking about wastewater disposal. You can't really separate them. One goes with the other, right?
Yes, one goes with the other. It's the volumes of wastewater in Oklahoma are much, about half the wastewater in Oklahoma is from oil and half is from gas. And so if we're concerned about earthquakes in Oklahoma, then, you know, the volumes of wastewater is worth discussing.
Thank you, Jim, for your call. Let's go to Brian in Superior. Hi.
Yes, I just want to make the comment that back in 95, I moved down to Tulsa area from Wisconsin. And up until 2010, I never experienced an earthquake in my life. And I experienced three or four of them in that last year that I lived in Oklahoma. And I looked into getting earthquake insurance, and it's so cost prohibitive. I would like you to have a little comment on the insurance aspect of this, because, you know, the average person can't really even afford earthquake insurance, and if they do, it really covers very little.
Mm-hmm. And tell me what you felt when you were in Tulsa. How did you feel the quake, Brian?
Well, I was in bed early in the morning, and everything started shaking, and I made a comment to my wife, and she never experienced it. And then a couple days later, it was the same thing at a lot higher severity, and it was just that. It was just the whole house shook.
Mm-hmm. Did your neighbors have earthquake insurance?
Well, nobody in that area really has earthquake insurance, to my knowledge. I mean, it's not really a common thing. And I went and talked to my agent, and I was informed that I couldn't even purchase earthquake insurance until, I believe it was like 6 months after the last event. And I don't remember what the magnitude was, magnitude 4 or something like that. But, there's a certain waiting period. And I was also informed that even if I did get insurance, that it covers very little.
Mm-hmm. So you moved out of the state?
Well, I didn't move out specifically for that reason. I always wanted to get back to Wisconsin, but yeah, it's concerning, and I would just like you to address that issue.
All right, thank you for the call, Brian. Barbara?
Yes, it is a concern, and he is correctly reporting the current situation with earthquake insurance. For earthquakes that are the size of what's being observed now, the best thing for homeowners to do is to read online. There's a website called earthquakecountry.org that will provide just basic safety tips about not having things that can fall on you around the house. But as far as damage to homes, there was some damage around Prague, Oklahoma, from magnitude 5.7, but these other earthquakes have been smaller. And so even in California, earthquake insurance is not necessarily a good bet financially. So it's all tied in also to building codes, how the house is built and whether it's built for shaking. So as I said, we're behind the curve as a society for addressing these concerns.
Thank you, Brian, for your call. John in Janesville, hello.
How are you doing?
All right, John, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm wondering, putting all this polluted water back into the ground, what does that do for people's wells that live in the area?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as Kathleen said, in some cases, depths are as great as 2 miles. So the water is injected very deep, 2 to 3 kilometers in the case of the wells that we studied. And the target formations are already saline from the original time that those sediments were deposited. So it's far, far from the depth. So it's thousands of meters below the surface. And your well, my well is 300 feet deep. So the shallow freshwater supplies that are used for groundwater are not at risk from the injection itself. They're more at risk from surface spills.
Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of surface spills?
Well, I think that I can't really comment on that, but I do know that just from my own reading of the news that storing of water on the surface has been one of the issues that has really increased the impact to local communities in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. And how do you shoot this stuff down 2 miles? How do you do it?
Well, in the case of this particular formation, the water pressure was so low in the target formation that they're essentially just pouring it down the well. Few years, the pressure in the target formation started to increase above what we call hydrostatic, and so there is some pumping pressure applied.
Mm-hmm. And I was also wondering, Barbara, before the industry, how long has this been going on? 30 years or more than that, this kind of wastewater disposal and fracking? Is it fairly new or not?
The fracking technology is newer than wastewater disposal. Wastewater disposal has been going on for decades.
Uh-huh. I'm just wondering if somebody did an extensive study, and if we need to do extensive studies if we're going to go about this kind of extraction of natural resources to make sure that there are no bad things that happen as a result of this. Are we doing that? It sort of sounds like maybe we're looking at it after things may happen.
Yeah, we have talked about what we would like to know if we were to advance the science, and there are basically 5 types of information. One is we'd like to better know the permeability of the target injection formation. And then the second is we'd like to know the stress conditions before the injection begins.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, you know, what it takes for the rocks to fail. We'd like to have better information about nearby faults and their orientation. In other words, what angle they're at.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to have injection pressure and injection volumes daily. Right now they're available monthly. And we'd like to have better seismic monitoring, so seismic instruments that are located closer to the injection wells so that the earthquakes can be detected early, and there could be perhaps, some kind of protocol to decide if injection should be stopped.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds entirely reasonable. So who have you brought those suggestions to?
Well, we're writing them up into a paper that we're going to submit to publication. The members of our working group are authors on that paper. Most likely. I'm not sure where we're going to submit it to. But and then part of our working group is a member of the Oklahoma Geological Survey, who is quoted in many of the articles that have commented on the issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question is, what you would like to know, it seems to me, a whole lot of people would like to have known before all of this got started. I still don't understand how an industry can come in and do this and have potentially serious consequences like earthquakes and not have done all those five steps that seem entirely reasonable. It's not asking that much, is it? I don't know how you can go ahead without knowing all of that.
Well, I think the reason why we've been able to go ahead without knowing all that is that there are 30,000 wastewater disposal wells in the country, and the process has been going on for decades. And it's only in the last, since 2010, 2011, that the earthquakes have really, we've had felt earthquakes in Ohio, Texas, Colorado, Arkansas, Oklahoma. So I think it's the more recent increase in disposal because of all the new oil and gas techniques that they're being used in the country that is causing the problem now. And so it's the history that there hasn't been a problem that has us where we are today, where the regulations seem to be behind the problem.
Mm-hmm. We welcome more phone calls. Our guest this hour of the program is Barbara Beekins. She's a research hydrologist at the U.S. Geological Survey in Menlo Park, California, and author of a new article in the journal Science, which came out earlier this month, concerning the Oklahoma earthquakes. Our question of the hour is, what is the connection between hydraulic fracturing and wastewater disposal, which is a result of that fracturing process? What's the connection between that and the huge number of earthquakes in Oklahoma? It's nothing to scoff at. It's fairly serious, it would seem to me. There have been, just over the last weekend, if you were in Oklahoma, it's probably front page news. By the way, we had a ton of earthquakes. We had 7 earthquakes in less than a 24-hour period of time. And in terms of what we had in the last year, a huge number. And parts of Oklahoma have had thousands of small earthquakes. So people are starting to study what the problem is here. And other states, Colorado and Ohio, have suspended some of these processes until more studies are done. What do you think of all of this? Our phone number, and we have lines open for you right now, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome more phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655. And Richard, we had an email from Richard from Clam Lake, who wondered how much portable water is being used in this. Barbara?
So there is an article that was published on that issue in Oklahoma. Let's see, it was Environmental Science and Technology by Kyle Murray, and I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but it did collect the numbers statewide for Oklahoma on how much water. So I would refer the reader to Kyle Murray's article in Environmental Science and Technology, which is available online.
Okay, and what is that again? Environmental Science?
And Technology.
What are the people, you mentioned the people in Jones, Oklahoma, where they've had all of these earthquakes. Obviously, you're talking about it all the time there. What are they saying? Are people so concerned they're moving away, or do they laugh it off, or what?
Well, certainly in the article that I read, it's been kind of humorous that they've told the mayor to stop them. So they don't. But more recently, I understand that I've been reading in the news that there are more serious meetings by local people who are concerned about the hazard. In our case, from the USGS, we have a huge amount of information online to help the public prepare for earthquakes. And so basic earthquake safety would be one of the things we would encourage people to look into.
Let's go to Wayne in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, it's Ray in Rhinelander. When you look at topographies, there's many different maps around the United States about water aquifers, their depths, and how it affects things on how in reference to drilling. Briefly, here in Wisconsin, we had the Crandon mine issue, et cetera, et cetera. We also have the biggest watershed, the biggest water aquifer from Lake Superior. You know, so there are studies done on a variety of different areas about the levels of water aquifers and how they're affected with drilling. Also, there are studies going on, I think the Norwegians are doing, I'm not sure, don't quote me on this, on deep well drilling and the amounts done in certain concentrated areas that can affect a variety of different things. So anyways, and also, hey, people, if you're going to use gas and oil and everything else, and if you don't watch what you use, they're going to make more. You're going to need more, so you got to watch what you do. I'll take your comment off the air.
All right, Ray, thank you.
Yeah, Ray is right. There is a lot of literature out there about which aquifers supply water, what their depths are, and the risk of those aquifers becoming contaminated. Are, you know, we've gotten pretty sophisticated since we, society, first realized that groundwater could become contaminated, and that would be the 60s or 70s, but mostly from surface sources. From the oil and gas industry, which is a very old industry in Oklahoma and Texas, been operating since the 20s or earlier in Texas, sealing of wells, as they penetrate through their freshwater drinking aquifers is a standard practice. Disposal of waste on the surface took place early on in the oil industry, but is a thing of the past. So the local freshwater managers, you know, their job is to make darn sure that they are keeping track of what kinds of industries in their area might pose a risk to the freshwater drinking supplies in their area. And so the caller referred to Wisconsin and the issues that have come up in Wisconsin. Each state has their own issues depending on their industry.
Mm-hmm. Laura in Hudson.
Hi. Hi. Yes, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a couple things to mention. One, as speaking about the aquifer, like the last gentleman, certainly it seems that the fault lines that are throughout the United States and even throughout the world, there's major fault areas that it would make sense that if you put add water in and add pressure and velocity, that somewhere in there it's going to weaken the integrity of those fault lines. So certainly I would think putting a lot of this water into the earth and whatever is in it chemically is not a good thing. Secondly, my experience with the fracking has been in Wisconsin, and I was a homeowner. I've lived there for 23 years, but I was a homeowner up until last June when I had to sell my place because of fracking. They came into the area where I was around Chippewa Falls, Rice Lake, Chautauqua, Wheeler, Knapp, Boyceville, all of that area is just infiltrated in the last year with mines and stations where they load it to the trains, and they built train tracks that carry it. And we went to all the meetings to look at everything and see what's going on, and it was primarily Vista Sand out of Texas that was at most of the board meetings. But the value of my home dropped in 1 year 15 years of value of my home dropped in 1 year. So it went down to what I paid for it 15 years earlier. And then I had also put $80,000 into it, and it didn't value anything. It was $1,000 different than what I bought it for in 1 year because of the fracking going on in the area. And then the third thing I just want to mention is just some of the, I don't know if you call it safety codes, or the things that they aren't talking about that your guest is speaking of needing to just sort of make a list of what subjects do we want to try to, you know, look further into and get some straight answers about. And certainly the sand itself getting airborne, it's a very fine type of sand. There's aerial pictures just in that area I'm speaking of in Wisconsin that were presented at the board meetings that show this, you know, cloud, this fine dusty cloud that hovers over all of the activity centers of these mines. And it's an airborne type of silica sand. It's very, you can breathe it. It's almost like an asbestos type of effect on the body. And there's dangers that way that nobody talks about. There's certainly the earthquake parts of where the wastewaters go. But at first, they weren't even covering the trucks that went by my house. They weren't even covering the trucks. The sand was coming like a cloud coming off of each one of the trucks. And you'd get it on your car. I got sort of a residue up on the house, on all my tables outside and stuff. And then they... I was one of the first people to just call the local police station and just say these trucks are flying down the roads and they don't have tarps on and what's going on, because it literally changed overnight.
Mm.
And a lot of these areas are townships that are unzoned. Maybe they aren't the strongest in income. There's elderly, generational deep, you know, farmers that maybe are ready to take the money because the families aren't continuing the farms, but what's happening is that they're putting a lot of money into these little townships that have no money because they know they've got to repair the roads and replace the weight of those trucks damaging the roads. And so they fix those every year, and they put money into the school district and so on and so forth. So I know dozens of people who have been given large sums per acre for their land, and the right to live on the land if they want to live right next to a mine. And the money is very enticing to a lot of these farmers, not just farmers, but people who own acreage, I should say it that way. And one of the reasons, you know, they're here is because of the way the glaciers laid up all this wonderful variety of, you know, sediment, and this type of sand is within that. And mm-hmm. that's what makes Wisconsin and other areas that they're mining so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the beauty being gone that can't be replaced, but the safety issues that they don't want to talk about. And they didn't want to talk about them at the meetings either, but the big companies and the money wins out.
Barbara, that's quite a story.
Yes, I didn't quite catch whether there's fracking going on or whether it's sand mining that is the issue.
Is it the sand mining, Laura?
Yeah, it's the frack sand mining.
Frack sand
The water that they wash the sand off with goes back into the wells and the aquifer, so they are washing the sand, and then that water is going back into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, so the very start of the comments, the issue was injecting at pressure into the ground, and there, knowing that there are earthquake faults occur commonly in the subsurface. And that is exactly the issue that that is at hand in our study and in wastewater injection and induced seismicity, is that we don't know beforehand necessarily where the faults are, and you are changing conditions by adding fluid pressure. I don't think that the fluid chemistry is an issue so much at those depths. Regarding the impact of the fracking industry in general and sand mining, I really appreciate the caller getting specific about the issues and the actual impact on real people from particular aspects of industrial operations in rural settings,
mm-hmm.
new industrial operations and expanded industrial operations in rural settings.
And you've piqued our interest. If you want to send us more information, Laura, on what you're going through and others, we'd be considering a show on it in the future. Thank you. And better days ahead to you. Let's go next to Jean in Menominee. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Yes. Does the guest know about the deep well injection issues that they had in Colorado back in the 60s? And the
yes.
earthquakes that were caused from the deep well injection of the Rocky Mountain Flats Research Center fluids?
Yes, I do. That was the Rocky Mountain Arsenal, and that is the date that the earth science community, recognized that earthquakes could be induced by deep waste injection. This was, I think, pesticide waste that was being injected by the Army at Rocky Mountain Arsenal, and it caused a series of earthquakes near Denver that were felt, some greater than magnitude 5. And subsequently, there was a computer model of pore pressure that was able to demonstrate that starting and stopping the injection over a period of months could associate the pore pressure front with the location of the earthquakes. And then that was followed by a controlled experiment in Rangeley, Colorado, where the scientists specifically set out to induce earthquakes with their injection.
So those studies were done quite a few decades ago.
Yeah, so the principle is well recognized that earthquakes can be induced. And as I said, we have wastewater injection has been going on in this country for decades. It's now it's causing more problems because the volumes are increasing.
Right. Thank you very much, Jean, for your call. Thank you, Barbara, so much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure.
Barbara Beacons, a research hydrologist. She's at the U.S. Geological Survey in Menlo Park, California, and is co-author of a report that came out earlier in July in the journal Science that looks at the Oklahoma earthquakes and attempts to. You've probably seen little news stories here and there recently because there have been so many earthquakes, attempting to answer why there have been so many earthquakes and what the connection may be to the fracking industry and the related wastewater disposal, which is the problem area in the industry. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee.